are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your Monday host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be chatting with John Corrales from Locked On Celtics to figure out how the Celtics navigate in the aftermath of Ime Udoka being suspended for the entire 2022-2023 NBA season. Then we chat with Jake Madison from Locked On Pelicans as CJ McCollum receiving a two-year extension to stay in New Orleans. What does CJ McCollum mean to this Pelicans franchise, and how will the Pelicans incorporate Zion Williamson into the team that had so much success last season? And lastly, we'll be joined by Mike Richman from Locked On Blazers to figure out how the Blazers' retooled roster will approach this season. Is Damian Lillard finally healthy for real this time? And will the reinforcements, Jeremy Grant, Gary Payton II, be enough to complement pieces like Anthony Simons and Yusuf Nurkic in the Blazers' quest to make some noise out west? As always, we appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. We are free and available on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. Joining us now is John Corrales from Locked On Celtics and Locked On NBA. You can follow on Twitter at John_Corrales. John, Ime Udoka, fresh off of a finals trip as a rookie head coach, suspended for the 2022-2023 season, with the Celtics citing that Udoka had an intimate relationship with a female member of the franchise's staff. This is like a completely unprecedented situation to have a head coach, a sitting head coach, suspended for an entire season. How, I mean, just on the surface, how big of a blow is this to the Celtics fresh off of a finals trip, right? It seemed like at the beginning of the offseason, everything was going the Celtics' favor, right? They added Gallinari and Brogdon to a team, coming off of the finals appearance. Like, and now it just seems like there's a lot of stuff going downhill very, very quickly for the Celtics organization.
September has not been kind to the Celtics at all. This is a big blow for sure. I don't know how much it sets them back, but it's, we're right around the corner from the season. They start practice on Tuesday officially. And so to have this happen the week before, I mean, maybe players were given a little bit more of a heads up, but there still wasn't a lot of lead time with this. And I assume that Ime was in on the planning for the season, and they were starting to get their whole kind of timeline together of this is what we want to work on in these first couple of weeks, and this is how we want things to go. And now all of a sudden he's gone. And so a guy that they've built trust with, that they fought for, is all of a sudden out. And I don't know how the guys are going to feel. I don't know if it's going to go all the way to like some level of betrayal, but they were in a culture of discipline and accountability. And it seems like throughout the course of that culture of discipline and accountability, here was a guy who was doing things behind the scenes that violated team rules. And that to me was one of the bigger things from a player standpoint. Like, how can you be off doing all of this stuff, getting yourself into trouble when we're the ones, when we did something wrong, you came down on us that hard? So I think there's just a lot of confusion, and it's going to take a little time for the emotions to subside and for them to get into the business of playing basketball.
It definitely feels like something that has the potential, unfortunately, to kind of fracture almost this team identity, right, of culture and accountability, something that was harvested and grown by Ime Udoka last season, a guy who, again, oversaw, progress in the development, the games of guys like Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, guys who took, significant strides forward last year under Ime Udoka, especially after buying in and kind of going through the growing pains and getting to that, not quite ultimate mountaintop, right? Didn't win the title, but right there at the finals, knocking on the door. I mean, and when you look at the situation, John, is it kind of a thing where you think Udoka's gone for good, and this is maybe the suspension is just kind of a way to save face a little bit, maybe let him step down at a later time? Because I mean, the Celtics, they threw the book at him.
Yeah, I think we have to understand there's a probably a legal process that's happening at the same time as this. And so coming out right away and firing him right away was probably not advisable. I have a hard time believing that he's going to be back in the organization. I don't think that that's very likely. But for now, at least, he is under suspension. So there is a universe where that does happen. I just doubt it. I feel like the year suspension, which comes with what was deemed a hefty financial penalty when it's all netted out, is how it was told to us. When you factor all that in, there's a stern punishment. And I think from there you can figure out how to properly move on and give Ime some severance, you know, contractually they owe him. But I don't see him coming back after this.
Now, it may not mean that Udoka's head coaching days are completely done at the NBA level, but at least, you know, as far as the Celtics organization is concerned, it does not look good.
There's going to have to be some process of redemption, some rehabilitation of his image. He's going to have to like sit down with Oprah or something and do an interview in a couple of years and then start getting himself back into the good graces. You know, he's going to have to publicly fall on the sword and say he's learned lessons and all of that stuff.
The Oprah Winfrey, Ime Udoka tell-all interview. My goodness. Only here at Locked On NBA can you find that hard-hitting analysis. But John, when we look at how this Celtics team moves forward out of this situation, right? Joe Mazzulla. Mm-hmm. First off, who is Joe Mazzulla? What does he bring to the table for this Celtics team? The guy being tapped to be the interim head coach now in the absence of Ime Udoka.
Yeah, he's a young guy. He's 34. Local guy, grew up in Rhode Island, so kind of has some roots here in New England. He has been around. He's one of the Brad Stevens hires. So he's been around for a few years. Interesting that Brad went with one of his hires and not one of Ime's hires. Just kind of makes you think that maybe the rest of that coaching staff is going to be on its way out as well when they hire a new coach. So, but Joe Mazzulla is I'd say respected within the organization. He's always been just kind of a quiet, head down kind of guy. He coached their summer league team for a season, and he's not much to know about him other than I think he just buys into what the Celtics have been trying to do, defense and trying to run a sound offense. So, but defense first. So, yeah, I think this is going to be an audition for him. He was a finalist for the Utah job, so it's not great circumstances at all. You want to have like more time to plan, but he was a finalist in Utah for a reason. He's a young up and coming assistant coach. And now he gets a sudden opportunity to show what he's got.
Funnily enough, Will Hardy, who did win the position in Utah, is also 34 years of age. So they are actually both tied for being the two youngest head coaches in the association. Now, found that out a little bit earlier today. But I mean, is the expectation, is Mazzulla going to talk at Media Day, John? Is he kind of just get trial by fire thrown in and have to answer questions?
I would expect that. I mean, Media Day is Monday. So my expectation for Media Day is going to be whenever the Ime stuff comes up, every chance they get to say that's been handled by the front office, we're just playing basketball. I think that's going to be the go-to deflect. But Joe is the interim head coach. Monday is media day. He's going to have to talk to us at some point. Might as well get your feet wet with everybody now. So yeah, I think he's going to be out there. The player is going to be out there. I don't know how much we're going to get as far as reaction, but everybody should be slated to talk.
Last thing for you here, John. Robert Williams, who's a huge part of what the Celtics want to do, have achieved, and want to accomplish in the future, out for the next 8 to 12 weeks after left knee surgery, the same knee that he had surgery on back March 30th. you know, how, in addition to everything that's going on with Udoka, you lose your head coach, how, you know, you have another blow to the Celtics, losing effectively your starting center, probably until well after Christmas time, more or less, you know, if he's somewhere out the max 12 weeks, somewhere around there. I mean, what's the expectation? Who steps in Robert Williams' absence? And how, again, how big of a hit is this to the Celtics to really get off on kind of some shaky footing to start the season?
So, so you mentioned before you had the Gallo thing and you're like, okay, he's still probably the seventh or eighth man. So you can deal with that. The initial diagnosis with Rob, the reporting was 4 to 6 weeks. So I thought, okay, no problem. 4 to 6 weeks. You're only going to miss a week or two of the regular season. Not a big deal. 8 to 12 is a big deal because it's not just 8 to 12 weeks of recovery. He has to ramp up and you have to take hit slowly with him. So yeah, I'm saying maybe by Christmas, it might be when we see him. And that's a long time. We can say that's when the season effectively starts, but the season actually starts in a few weeks. And now you're going to have Luke Kornet and Noah Vonleh potentially. Not exactly the names that you're hoping for in these positions. The Celtics put themselves in this spot where they're saying, hey, Luke Kornet's going to be our third big. And okay, that's fine for a third big. What's going to happen when you need to go get more? Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out if their two-way guy, Fiondo Cabangeli, is going to get an opportunity. Look good in summer league, but we know what summer league means in the regular season. Barely anything. But he's the guy who most closely resembles Robert Williams as far as style. He's a rim runner. He's a lob catcher. He's a shot blocker. Not nearly as good as Robert Williams, but you get to see if that style, his style, fits in and the Celtics can continue to do what they've been doing stylistically without having to completely change what they've, you know, been running. So there's some possibility. Again, there's some timeline that says these guys are good enough to cobble together 25 minutes a game, and you're going to lean on Grant Williams to play a little bit more small ball, or you try some super small lineups where you don't even have a big in there. So that's where Malcolm Brogdon comes in, and you just try versatile, switchy, super small. None of these solutions are particularly great, though.
Yeah, none of them sound fantastic. Suddenly you're missing Daniel Tice a little bit. Maybe you're like,
I can't imagine a team having a worse season without having played a single game.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, it's like you said in the very beginning, right? September has not been kind to the Celtics. But what does Boston look like in the aftermath of the Ime Udoka situation? How impactful will losing Robert Williams to start the season be for the Celtics? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Celtics. John, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
My pleasure, man.
Coming up, CJ McCollum receiving his extension to stay in New Orleans for an extra couple of years. Plus, how do the Pelicans incorporate Zion Williamson into the team that had play-in success and made it into the playoffs and took two games off of the Phoenix Suns last season? We're going to get there after a quick message from our friends over at BetOnline, because BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your football betting info this season. Find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis on every single game that you can find. As always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all of your sports wagering information with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every single sport out there. They've got you covered for MLB postseason. NBA is right around the corner. They've got you for all your fighting odds, UFC, MMA, boxing, you name it. They've got you covered over at BetOnline. And right now, you can head over to BetOnline to take a look at who the 2023 NBA championship odds-on favorites are. Right now, Golden State Warriors leading the pack, jumping ahead of the Boston Celtics at plus 575. Boston Celtics right behind them at plus 600. Milwaukee Bucks in third place at plus 700. And then rounding out the top five championship favorites, the Brooklyn Nets and the LA Clippers at plus 750 apiece. So for all that and more odds, head over to betonline.net to see all the trends and action available to you. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. And we are continuing on here at Locked On NBA Monday. Just a reminder, Locked On NBA is free and available wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube. Joining us now is Jake Madison from Locked On Pelicans and Locked On NBA. You can follow on Twitter at Nola Jake. Now, Jake, the Pels extending CJ McCollum, a two-year, $64 million extension, carrying him through the 2025-2026 season. Now, his contract lines up with the long-term contracts of both Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. What does this extension say about CJ McCollum's role in New Orleans and how the Pels front office views him?
Yeah, you know, I think when they traded for him at the trade deadline last year, they kind of viewed him as the missing piece, the guy they really had to bring in. One, from just his on-court performance perspective, right? This is an excellent three-point shooter and a guy that can create his own three-point shot. They didn't really have another guy that could stretch the defense like that at all during Zion's tenure. You know, apologies there to J.J. Redick a little bit. So to bring in just kind of a pure shooter like that, a guy they thought had some untapped potentials, maybe a primary ball handler, was something they really thought would fit in well next to Brandon Ingram and then Zion whenever he would return, which is going to be this coming season. And then I think they also like his veteran presence in the locker room. This is still a really young team. They're going to have, you know, second and third year guys playing significant roles as they push for the postseason this coming year. I think they like having a guy like CJ McCollum in the locker room, able to kind of settle people down, kind of be that consummate professional and hopefully teach them. And don't forget, this is the guy who at the NBA All-Star game kind of called out Zion Williamson, talking about how he hadn't reached out to CJ yet after the trade. And that kind of seemed to wake Zion up. It got him back to New Orleans sooner than we were expecting. You can't really put a price on a guy like that who's getting your best player to kind of be the best version of himself. So when you kind of factor those two things in, New Orleans always looked at CJ McCollum as like a cornerstone piece.
You talk about one of the most interesting facets of this acquisition from when it happened to how it played out with the play-in push, with the playoff berth, all of that, is CJ McCollum as a ball handler, right? Like, I don't think that was something that I expected out of this trade. I don't think it's something that a lot of people expected, but he really kind of flourished in this almost primary facilitator role in New Orleans.
Yeah, he did. And I think that's what worked really well, right? Like in the 20 or so games he played here in New Orleans, he basically set career highs across the board. You know, this was a guy I think they looked at and said, okay, he's been playing next to Dame his whole career. What if we put him in a different situation, a different scenario, and what might we see from him then? I don't think he's a pure ball handler. You definitely don't want him playing point guard all of the time, but in spurts here or there, sharing the rock with a guy like Brandon Ingram, who did set a career high in assists last season, or Zion, and we saw the point Zion experiment a couple of years ago where he was averaging over 4 assists per game. I think they kind of look at him as a half ball handler or so. And when you put all these other half ball handlers that they have on the roster together, well, you're over one, so you kind of have a point guard just kind of chopped up in a sense, I think. And that's kind of what they viewed him, that they could put him in a role like this and he would absolutely thrive. And again, he averaged almost 25 points per game last season with New Orleans. He shot the three-pointer exceptionally well. That's what you need out of a guy like that for this team.
It's kind of like you have a point guard, but it's like Voltron, right? You have to stick all these pieces together to make it happen. The tricky part here, though, right, if you're New Orleans, is how do you now introduce Zion into the fold after all the success this team had last season? What needs to be the approach with Zion and kind of integrating him this year?
You know, look, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, right? They did make the postseason. They took the Phoenix Suns to 6 games, but a couple of those were without Devin Booker there, you know, and they were still sub 500 last year. I think we're a little bit blinded by the fact that, they gave the Suns a run for their money when we saw the Suns weren't maybe as good as we thought at one point. So I don't think it's like, oh no, you're going to mess up the team chemistry or something like that by getting a guy like Zion freaking Williamson back out there on the court, right? Let's pump the brakes there to a degree. You know, Zion has a certain court gravity to him. His sophomore year, he averaged 27 points per game, something along those lines, and was dishing out the ball, shot 70% at the rim. Anyone's going to be able to fit around there with him. If there's going to be periods of time where CJ just might be a spot up three-point shooter, and he's going to get some of the most open looks he's ever had in his career, it's a good situation if you're him to be in. And I think when you look at a guy like CJ, Zion Williamson, and Brandon Ingram, they're going to stagger those guys. So there will be times when it's CJ McCollum kind of running the offense and out there maybe with some subs, or it might be CJ and Zion, or it might be CJ and Brandon Ingram. And his game, being that kind of on-ball shooter that he is, off-ball shooter as well, lends itself to kind of anybody. If it's Zion driving to the basket and having to kick out to CJ, it's a great thing. If it's CJ with the ball in his hands trying to create for a pull-up 3-point shot to space the court eventually for Zion. That works too. And Brandon Ingram fits into that wonderfully as well. So I don't think, you know, I think it's still going to see a lot of kind of point guard duties shared amongst the three of those guys, and it won't be anyone's full-time role. But I think they all complement each other well enough that this is going to be pretty easy. And when you start to really think about it, I get excited about what this Pelicans offense really could be, because I don't know how some teams are going to stop some of the combinations and lineups they're going to have out there on the court.
You mentioned some of the numbers, right, from the last time Zion was healthy. Have people almost kind of forgotten just how good Zion is when he's actually on the floor?
Do I have to call out Bet Online and the Locked On Network here for our top 50 guys who move the betting lines the most, and Zion wasn't listed on that? I don't know, man. A guy who can put up 27-7 in like 4.5 assists on 70% shooting, 65% shooting seems pretty good to me. But I think people really have forgotten about him a little bit, you know, and that's going to be the case with sitting out a season. But he's under contract now. He signed the extension with no player option. It removes that little bit of drama from there. He's been working with a personal chef and a personal trainer. And the reviews from everyone I've spoken to around him, they rave about him. They say he's in the best shape of his life, not just, you know, his young career, but his life beyond even Duke Zion. If he was putting up the numbers he put up at age 20 and he wasn't in the best shape of his life, I wonder what he's going to be able to do this season. So I'm really excited about it. And look, if people are forgetting about him, I think in the first couple weeks of the season, they're going to be very much reminded exactly who he is.
Yeah, we could be in store for a monster season from Zion. But you mentioned there a moment ago, Jake, kind of, you know, maybe getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here about, you know, reintroducing Zion to this lineup, what it means for the Pelicans. Where is the bar currently set in your mind as far as expectations for the Pelicans this season after their successful play-in run and securing a playoff berth and, you know, taking the Suns to 6 games last year? Where do you set the bar for what a successful season is for the Pels?
Yeah, it's tough. It's actually really tough to try and figure out. You figure they were a playing tournament team last year. They won the, you know, 2 games to get into the postseason. They held their own against the Phoenix Suns. So if you kind of go on like the natural progression, right, you should say they're not a playing tournament team. So it's 6th seed or better. But then you look at the Western Conference and who are they necessarily ahead of? Who's gotten worse? And that's where things in the West start to get muddled pretty quickly. You conceivably have 10 teams out there, I think, that could easily make a case for those 8 spots that, you know, you have in the actual postseason. That's a problem for New Orleans. So I want to say 6th seed or better. I think if things click really well and the offense is as scary as I think it could be, you know, they have a chance, if health goes their way, to maybe be the 4 seed, might be kind of the ceiling for this squad. But it's also going to depend so much on some of these other teams in the West and who gets hit with an injury at an inopportune time. So because of that, it could be the play-in tournament too, but it's like, that's the bare minimum, I think. But it feels like it should be higher than that, given what we saw from them last season.
Now, we talked a little bit about kind of this team point guarding by committee, if you will. They drafted a point guard, Dyson Daniels, 8th overall in this last NBA draft. What is Dyson Daniels' role, if any? Does he even have one on the Pels roster this season, or is he kind of somebody that you maybe expect to be brought along a bit more slowly?
He's a bit of a mystery right now, I think. You know, he only played in one game in Summer League, leaving that early with injury, so we didn't really get to see much of him there. The team's been working out together in parts throughout this offseason. I've heard really good things from Dyson Daniels that he's more NBA-ready than what we've been expecting from him, where originally I thought maybe he isn't in the rotation. It's tough to really find a spot for where he's going to be. I think the backcourt's kind of set with a guy like Jose Alvarado getting some of those minutes, CJ McCollum too. You might even have Brandon Ingram playing the 2 a little bit in this lineup. If you think the starting lineup's going to be CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, Herb Jones, Zion Williamson, and Jonas Valanciunas. So the backcourt's a little bit crowded. I don't know if he fits there just yet. It's really going to depend on his passing. Where he might get on the court is kind of as that like wing creator type of role that you see a lot of teams run, that the Pelicans do with Brandon Ingram a little bit too. He's got good size, right? This is a guy who's 6'8", 6'9". It's not like he's a 6'3 point guard and you can only play him at that position. I wouldn't be shocked, because they like his defensive versatility. He's got high upside on the defensive side of the ball. That's kind of the big question mark around this Pelicans team. If he can play some defense, he'll find the court. And I wonder if it's going to be more at the wing to start the year than it will be kind of as a true point guard, and they kind of throw him out there to pass the ball around a little bit, but more defend than anything else.
How good can this Pelicans team be after their success last season, reintroducing Zion into the mix? Is Zion poised to have a monster season? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Pelicans. Jake, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, Jackson.
Coming up, will the retooled Blazers and Damian Lillard be able to make some noise in the Western Conference this season? We're going to get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, we appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Free and available on all podcast platforms. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, wherever you get your pods. You can listen to this show. We're also on YouTube. Just go to YouTube. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Joining us now is Mike Richmond from Locked On Blazers, who you can follow on Twitter at Mike G Rich. Now, Mike, the Blazers, the retooled Portland Trail Blazers, if you will. We'll start with Damian Lillard, because everything with the Portland Trail Blazers starts with Damian Lillard. Extending Lillard this past offseason, or earlier this offseason, I should say, 2 years, $122 million extension, keeping him in Portland through the 2026-2027 season. Let's start with the fact that, look, I think that Dame and the loyalty quotes and all that is largely overplayed at this point. But on a serious note, what does it mean to have a star player like Dame who seems committed to an organization for better or for worse?
Yeah, I mean, do you want to pay him $65 million when he's 5? So it depends on the type of fan you are. To some fans, I wholeheartedly support it. It is incredibly important to have that type of loyalty in this type of market. Someone who wants to be here, someone who is very much not Clyde Drexler, right? He's not going to peace out and go win a championship somewhere else and literally never come back. Clyde is in some major American city. I'm not sure which, Jackson. You can tell me where he landed. But
it's a good thing I don't have a Clyde jersey behind me.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, in general, like, it's meaningful to the team to have your best player commit. I think we'll get down the line and realize paying pretty much any 36-year-old 35% of the cap is a big financial commitment. But for now, in the near term, Dame's here, baby. You might as well celebrate.
And talking about Dame, right? Where is he at health wise, right? Because that was such a big issue last season. You know, this year, are we getting the same? Are we getting 100% Dame this season?
Reportedly, yes. Right, like he says, he's good to go. He said he was dealing with the sort of core injury, sports hernia thing for 4.5 years. Like, this was part of his life, and that's kind of why he delayed surgery, because in the past he had gone to camp like, oh, my core hurts a little bit, and then averaged 28-7. And he's like, I'm good. Like, I'm cool. And it just didn't, it caught up with him. You know, he's 31 years old and it caught up with him. He was bad and then he was out. I think like that was as bad as we've seen Dame play in the league since he was a rookie. He says he's good to go. He's out there on the practice court, full go, and he'll be ready to be Damian Lillard again in a couple weeks here.
I want to talk about some of the kind of reinforcements here for this Blazers team, right? The addition of Jeremy Grant, bringing in Gary Payton II. First off, when you look kind of now at this Blazers team as a whole, what's kind of the pecking order maybe offensively, right? Because obviously Dame eats first, right? Dame number one option, what have you. But what's the pecking order after that, right? You've got Anfernee Simons, you've got Jeremy Grant, you've got Nurkic. Like, how do you kind of order those guys, you know, 2 through 4 there in your eyes?
Well, I've got a great podcast to recommend. It's called Locked On Blazers, where I talked about that on Monday's show. You can listen to it Monday, September 26th show, wherever you get podcasts. It's also available on YouTube. I think one of the curious things about the Blazers is that Jeremy Grant is their second best player. He is just, that's what he is. But he's going to be third in usage on offense. It's going to be Damon. It's going to be Ant. And if Jeremy Grant has that role, do you get as much, you know, like, can you maximize the ask, what he's going to, because he's going to get a big ask on defense? It's curious. That is the art of coaching, right? Is like, you've got to convince a guy to be the best thing for the team when it might not be like the best. He doesn't get to spread his wings as widely as he might want to, but I think it's going to be Dame. I think it's going to be Anfernee Simons getting a whole bunch of touches, and then it's going to be some combination of Jeremy Grant, and then somewhere they got to figure out a way to feed the beast and give Yusuf Nurkic some touches down low.
Now, when you look at trying to figure out, I guess, where this Blazers team kind of stacks up, right, with the rest of the Western Conference. Should there be like this added level of confidence for Blazers fans, given the fact that Utah's now out of the running, San Antonio, both of those teams kind of just going full scale rebuild now? It kind of opens things up a bit more out west to where you should probably feel relatively confident that the play-in is well within reach. But where are you kind of setting the expectations for this version of this Blazers team?
Yeah, I think because of the way the bottom of the West works, with all due respect to team in a major American city, they wear red, they got green and yellow jerseys this year as well. Like some of those teams just suck and they suck on purpose. A lot of the bottom half of the West is bad on purpose. San Antonio super duper pulled the plug. The floor is 11. You cannot be worse than 11 because they won't let you. Houston and OKC are going to run away and hide, and San Antonio's going to try to join them there, and Utah, so help them. Danny Ainge will get there too. Like, they want to be bad. So the floor is 11, which means you just have to get
that other 11 is scary, because the other 11, they all want to be in the playoffs.
100%, 100%. And really, it's the Kings. It's the Kings that are right there at 11. I think the Blazers are in that play-in tier with the Lakers, who aren't very good, and along with maybe the Pelicans, but I think the Pelicans' ceiling is incredibly high. I think the sort of two through seven, 2 through 8 in the West is really tight. Like, there's a bunch of similarly skilled teams in that range, and the Blazers are probably in the bottom of that tier, right? They're a play-in team with upside is probably where I'd put them.
Is this Blazers team, is there another move you potentially see happening further down the pipeline, another spot in the lineup where you're just like, no, they really need to bolster this, or anybody whose name you kind of have on the Blazers radar at this point?
Well, Blazer fans want me to say Jared Vanderbilt. Legally, my listener base needs me to say Jared Vanderbilt. So y'all, Jared Vanderbilt.
Mike's just here so he doesn't get fined. He's saying, yeah, Jared Vanderbilt on the national podcast so he doesn't get fined.
Y'all. Exactly. Give it a listen. No, they're thin up front. They're going to have Jeremy Grant and Justice Winslow play some minutes at center. They're going to have Nazir Little play a bunch of minutes at four, at least at some point. They're going to have Josh Hart play some minutes at four. Those gentlemen are not necessarily suited to play those positions. At some point, they need to add depth at that spot. How they do that is a question mark, right? Josh Hart's entering a contract year. He'll be a free agent this summer. Jeremy Grant's entering contract year. He'll be a free agent this summer. But did you trade for him to let him walk or to flip him at the deadline? We'll see. Nazir Little, same as is rookie extension eligible, but again, we'll be entering restricted free agency this summer. They've got some parts to trade. They got some young guys at the end of the bench that maybe are sweeteners in those types of trades, like a Keon Johnson. But the idea, I don't know that they have like an obvious, other than Vanderbilt in Utah, who a lot of people are going to chase, I don't know if there's an obvious a need for them, but they need taller people. They could use a few taller folks on the roster.
You know, I was kind of upset because we didn't get a chance to chat about him back during Summer League, because his Summer League was cut just atrociously short. But Shaedon Sharpe, right? Yep. He had a lot of buzz, a lot of hype coming out of the NBA draft, managed to fall to the Blazers at pick number 7. There was a lot of speculation about what was going to happen with that 7th pick, right? Do the Blazers actually make the selection? Do they package it? Do they trade it? Do they flip it and try to continue to bolster that lineup around Dame for another, you know, kind of the retooled roster look? So what happens with Shaedon Sharpe, right? Can he contribute right away? Is he even ready to contribute at a high level right away?
Great question answered on today's Locked On Blazers. Shaedon Sharpe.
Shameless plugs left and right.
Listen, you don't invite me on the show if you don't want to plug the pod. Sharpe, they want him to play. The Blazers' top 7 is kind of set in stone. Damian Lillard, Anthony Simons, Nazir Little, Jeremy Grant, Yusuf Nurkic, Josh Hart, and Gary Payton II. That's it. That's 7 dudes who are going to play every single night. We're talking 8, 9, 10. Chauncey Billups has mostly played 10 guys as a head coach, so we're talking 8, 9, 10. I think 8 is Justice Winslow. I think 9 is Trendon Watford. So we're talking about the 10th man, and that spot is absolutely open for Shaedon Sharpe if this team is committed to go small. They want him to play. Every time you hear them talk in the media, Chauncey Billups on the All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson kind of just unprompted said how good Shaedon Sharpe was. In an interview Damian Lillard did, he kind of unprompted said how good Shaedon Sharpe was. The team likes him, but he's 19, and it's hard to be both really good and get a lot of minutes for a 19-year-old. If he's ready, they hope he can contribute, and he'll be someone Jonathan Kuminga style who will try to, you know, be a 19-year-old who plays on a good team. Maybe not that good of a team, but like they want him to be a contributor if he's capable, but they are a team that wants to make the playoffs. So they're trying to sort of, you know, navigate two paths.
Is Damian Lillard ready for a healthy bounce back season this year? Are the backups in Portland enough? The reinforcements, if you will. You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at, where was it again, Mike, that you have us covered for that at?
It is at Locked On Blazers, available wherever you get podcasts and also on YouTube.
I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms. We are also on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. But as always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.